Welcome and thank you for joining us for FocusWire's second LinkedIn audio event. Let's hear it. I am FocusWire Editor-in-Chief, Mitra Sorrells, and our topic today is the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and what it may mean for the travel industry. This has been a rapidly developing story in the past week, so I want to thank our four guests for responding so quickly to our invitation to participate in this discussion. We have allotted 30 minutes, and we may have some time for questions. So if you want to ask a question, please click the raised hand icon. And then if I acknowledge you, you will need to unmute yourself in order to be heard. We are recording this, and we will have a story on FocusWire with the audio file available on demand. So please go to our website, focuswire.com, to subscribe to our e-newsletter so that you'll receive that and all of our updates in your inbox every morning. And now for some quick introductions, we have with us today Chris Hemeter, Managing Director of Thayer Ventures, Kara Whitehill, Founder and Managing Partner of Unlock Advisors, Jack Dow, Founder and CEO of Grapevine, and Ariel Cohen, Founder and CEO of Navan, which until a month ago you would have known as Trip Actions. So welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So rather than rehashing everything that has transpired in this last week, I think maybe we can start with a question for each of you. In five words or less, what is your main takeaway from the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank? Chris, let's hear it.
Five words or less? Okay. Humans are hysterical creatures.
That's a good one. Kara, what do you have for us?
Governance, diversification, financial literacy, and resilience.
Okay. Kind of a little masterclass right there that you're sharing with us, I think. Jack, what's your five words or less?
Confidence really is king.
Okay. And Ariel?
I would say make sure that your team is really strong.
Okay.
Good one.
So, yeah, let's get into some of this. You know, one of the things I noticed yesterday, famed hedge fund manager Ray Dalio wrote that he sees SVB's failure as potentially a canary in the coal mine for the financial system and a sign of a larger trend that the system has become too reliant on private credit and risk taking in recent years. Any thoughts around that?
No, I think, I mean, that just sort of supports what I said about hysterical humans. I mean, I don't agree with that. I think that the financial system is more resilient today than it's been in a very, very long time. A lot of the changes that were put in place post 2008, a much more active and creative Fed and Treasury, I think are all leading to places where we have more stability. We will continue to have more stability. And what we're just going through now is a bit of a moment of hysteria, frankly.
Yeah. Something we'll be talking about, you know, will this be one of those pivotal moments that we talked about, you know, into perpetuity?
Yeah. I mean, I think so. It's an interesting thing because there are so many sort of fantastical aspects to the story, right? Everything from the confluence of events that killed the bank, the sort of incredible display of the prisoner's dilemma at work,
right?
And then just sort of how quickly the hysteria has rippled around the world. It's a fascinating moment, frankly. The interesting thing is, I think that the impact on real companies that are building real products in the end of the day is much more of a little blip in the road than any sort of a structural effect.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting aspects as it stands right now, right? The bank was financially sound, right? There was no fraud. They weren't doing anything illegal. It was this element of panic with people withdrawing that kind of took it down, and it caused companies that were otherwise doing all the right things to suddenly be in this very precarious moment, right? And it's interesting because, like, the question becomes, are the rules that we have in place the right rules? Are the regulations that we have in place for banking the right regulations. And so I think that's one of the things that's going to come out of this as we see it evolve.
Go ahead.
I will add maybe a perspective more from the fintech perspective to this. I think, you know, SVB is a bank and obviously very important here in Silicon Valley for the startup community. We are actually, SVB is a customer of ours, and also we have a lot of different things with SVB. So obviously for me, it's almost on a personal level. I banked through them through two different startups and so on. But if you look at this from a fintech perspective, I do think that in a raising interest rate environment, some of the fintech offerings that are out there will get challenged. And I think that in the next year, you'll see who was running really strong business models in these environments and who didn't. So I don't think that, I don't know if it's systematic or not, right? And I think that's maybe the question, and I actually don't know. But I do think that raising interest rate environment will create challenges for the fintech industry.
Totally. So, I think that's a spot on comment, right? Because the fundamental sort of the change that a lot of people I think don't understand is this in the drama of the shift from the era of basically free money to what is now, I would argue, more of a normal era. And the ripple effect, the consequence of that change will be felt by everyone. That is more the sort of meta story that will affect every player in our value chain, frankly.
Yeah, and those are the things that underscore the importance of good governance, right? Because anybody that has looked at, you know, the financial system for the past, 10 plus years, like, interest rates were never going to stay where they were forever. So, you know, in this world where you know that they're going to have to go up at some point, that should cause you, from a financial management perspective, to take certain actions to hedge against that, right? And that's where I think good governance comes into play. And perhaps SVB didn't have those kinds of controls and risk management protocols and things in place. But as a startup, and, you know, I think Jack and Ariel can probably comment on this, you know, pretty acutely, but, you know, especially early stage companies, you don't have that financial expertise on your team because you're typically 2 or 3 or 5 people skewing toward product and engineering. So you're really leaning toward your board, right? And your advisors to help you manage some of that financial aspect of running your business and to look around those corners and help you think through it. Because that's something that early stage companies just aren't going to have in their skill set on their bench.
Yeah, you know, I'd agree. It's you know, what's happening with your deposits is not something that would be in anyone's consideration for, you know, for the last, I don't know, 50 years or something like that, especially for the last sort of 10 or 20. So it's, it suddenly brought into scope considerations that aren't necessarily, as you say, in the technical skill set of many founders. And it shines the spotlight, I think, on boards to make founders aware of this kind of, you know, risk that wasn't necessarily in the limelight before.
I think, you know, to add to this, and it's kind of getting back to what I said about the team, when you are starting a startup, I think that more than how much you are raising and the valuation of it, it's important to from who you are raising the money, right? And I think that if you are surrounding yourself with really good investors, which eventually are becoming your board of directors, you will be more informed. And I think that can help a lot generally, but definitely in time of crises. I really, you know, throughout this weekend, I felt that while there was a lot of uncertainty, I also had a lot of information, right? And I kind of knew early where this thing is going to go. And that's really important. So maybe my advice to early stage startups, to your point, is to focus less on the how much and more of who are you doing it with. And I think that's really important.
You know, I'm curious though, Ariel, because you kind of referenced this. So your company has received, I believe, 2 large venture debt rounds from Silicon Valley Bank. Is that right? $500 million in 2020 and $100 million this past December. Do I have that right?
Yeah, it's a little bit, it's funny. We had people asking us about it over the weekend. There is huge difference between funding rounds, right? When you actually get money from VCs to various types of financing debt rounds that in our case are mainly used in our payments business to provide credit to our customers, right? And these instruments are not like the usual funding or debt, like, you know, you have debt and now you need to return it. It's a short-term debt.
Okay.
It's always done by syndicates. In fact, in our last round, most of the funding is actually coming from Goldman Sachs, while SVB was the administrator of it. So, but to your point, because they are the administrator of it, it did require us to take some actions last week to move the administration to a different bank, to one of the big banks, right? So we are a later stage company and our financials and also our banking, right, is way more complex than early stage. So we never had this thing that we had dependency on one thing or the other, but we definitely needed to act, right? We definitely needed to change some of the way that this program is administrated.
Okay. You know, Chris, I know that last week at ITB, you spoke on a panel on travel investments that was moderated by my Focusrite colleague, Sharuta Fadness. I think maybe coincidentally, ironically, this was like just before all of this really broke. And you talked about the shift in the risk curve toward profitability instead of growth. What does this situation do to that risk curve?
I don't know if this particular situation changes anything about where we are on the risk curve or where institutions are pressed. I mean, I think that this is an example of the fallout, right? Of that shift. I mean, it's sort of a theoretical thing when people say, we're shifting on our, you know, we're on a different point of the risk curve now in terms of investments. And so what does that mean about what startups have to articulate? You know, that seems sort of like a theory, but the reality is that shift of the risk curve is the fundamental point of, you know, money is now expensive.
Right.
And yield can be found in other places. I mean, that's the point, right? If you really go back to the great pool of capital that flows through the hands of venture capitalists and then ultimately into the coffers of startups as they build their businesses, that great pool of capital is looking for yield, right? They've got responsibilities, the Texas Teachers Fund, the retirement right. fund for firemen in Idaho. They have to find yield so that they can service the obligations that they have to their constituency. And, you know, in a day when the interest rates were zero, there was nowhere else to find yield but to press it out onto the risk curve, into startups, into, you know, whatever alternative investments you can think of, or even, you know, just more aggressive investments. That's why we saw so many asset bubbles, not just one. This is shifting it back. Now, if you're an endowment, you can get a 4% return on your cash, right? Why would you don't need to be out on the risk curve to find yield. And so that just changes the dynamic for in every aspect of the finance community and the way money is treated and working. And the Silicon Valley Bank failure was partly an example of that. But it's still the fundamentals of startups, you know, having to be mindful of the fact that capital is now expensive, which means it's going to be, you know, much more discerning in terms of the bets it makes. You know, that's something that I think it has been developing and is going to remain true now for a very long time. And I think also I think it's healthy. I think good businesses should get financed and, you know, bad experiments shouldn't enter the market because they just create noise and they make
right.
it harder for good businesses 100%. to grow.
I actually want to add to Chris, I think that the fundamentals, and I think that's what you mean by good businesses, I think whether you're a startup, later stage startups, more kind of a long-term business, the fundamentals of the business, which you can measure with the unit economics, with your growth rate, with how much are you willing to spend to sustain a certain growth, all of these fundamentals are always important. And I think in times of crises, if you didn't have these fundamentals, it will get exposed. And I'm not even sure that it's related to startups or to different businesses. You know, we are in the travel industry, and you have a lot of travel agencies there that their financials, when you look at this, you don't have a lot of room for errors. And that could be, you know, agencies that have been running for years. So I think every business needs to make sure that the fundamentals, that gross margins, the unit economics is really high, that the return on investment from a go-to-market perspective is really good, and so on. And I think if you do that, you are more likely to get financing in any type of environment. And also, you can always make the decision to generate cash, right? To become cash flow positive. And by that, you are kind of controlling your own destiny. I would add one thing to this. I'm actually usually, probably that's why I'm doing startups. I'm on the optimistic side. And I think that while there are a lot of challenges in the economy right now, there are a lot of advancement in technology right now. And obviously, AI is a big part of it. And AI is not just a buzzword. AI will add a lot of efficiency to businesses. And when you add a lot of efficiency, again, it's kind of creating this effect that your economics are better. Therefore, you can continue this curve and growing and so on in any financial environment. So I think on one side, a lot of pressure from a financing perspective. On the other side, a lot of advancement in technology that will allow companies that will embrace it to be significantly more efficient.
Yeah, and I appreciate your optimism, and we've heard expressed from a few of you. But one thing, I just got in some data this morning from my colleague Mike Coletta at Focusrite that I think is very interesting. From the database of startups that we track their funding and have been doing this for many, many years. So funding to travel startups through March 15th of this year, just yesterday, is only at $517 million. Since January 1, whereas the last 3 years for the full Q1, so through the end of March, it was more than $8 billion each year. So right now we're on track to be back to about 2014 levels. What does that say to you? And in particular, I'd love to hear, Jack, you know, you're an early stage startup. I mean, what does all of this say to you and have you thinking about?
Yeah, I think looking at sort of startup funding as one big bucket can be misleading. There are, you know, within that $8 billion from the year before, there are probably a handful of businesses that have taken the lion's share of that. So in a like-for-like comparison, it isn't always, you know, as simple as that. But I do think that particularly travel startups have had a very challenging couple of years, and it's been, you know, to have survived through the period in itself, I think, is a huge accolade to many, many startups out there. And the great thing is that everyone's now coming out of the kind of the COVID bubble and realizing what opportunities out there. And to what Ariel was just saying, you know, there's a real focus on efficiency and productivity and getting their sort of improving profit margins and things like that. But it is very challenging for early stage startups, you know, the very early stage startups, especially in travel, to raise funding. I think there's a bit of a gap until you get to Series A, when then there's a proof point there that a lot of sort of, you know, funds take on. But knocks in confidence like we've had over the last week just add another layer of complexity to, you know, what is already a challenging environment for startups, for the early stage startups at least.
I think what can really help there, it's actually the team. I know this from my own experience. I think travel is such a challenging business from economics perspective that obviously there is a really big prize at the end because it is such a big market. But the economics, because of the travel infrastructure, are extremely challenging. And you will need to raise enough money on the early stages, seed A, B. And the only way to do it is if you have the right team. So, for example, me and Ilan, my co-founder, we are kind of fortunate that it was our second startup. So, therefore, we could have raised enough money on a seed and A rounds. But sometimes I'm talking with founders that want to start a startup. And in the travel space, I think it takes some time. And investors are very cautious about it. So you really need to think, do you have enough money to start this journey? Because the economics in travel are questionable at the beginning. So that's really important.
Yeah, and yeah. I would add to that too. I not every business needs to be venture funded. There are
right.
a lot of good ideas out there that can be really good, solid businesses that don't need venture funding. And, you know, bootstrapping and kind of growing slowly and self-funding through cash flow, like that's a really good option for a lot of the things that I see in travel, especially in the more consumer-oriented versus the B2B, which is really where I focus more. So I think there's kind of this weird assumption, and that may have been driving a lot of the high funding that we would see is, you know, somebody has an idea and they immediately think, okay, I need to go, you know, pitch a bunch of VCs and raise all this capital through that path. And that's really not always necessary.
Thanks for that plug, Kara.
But I think one challenge as well, just to add to, I think what Ariel was saying, travel startups or even travel often just gets put into one big bucket. And it is such an enormous industry. You know, within hotel tech in itself, there could be multiple billion-dollar companies within, you know, B2B SaaS. So there's multiple areas, you know, payments. You know, obviously we're in the sort of remarketing space, but TMCs. There's so many areas of opportunity, and I think quite a lot of it comes down to education and sort of identifying those differences and where those differences sit, and how there are huge opportunities for multiple verticals within travel, and they are very different.
You know, I want to ask, Chris, I think you used the word hysteria or hysterical humans at the beginning. Obviously, we all know that the run on the bank last Wednesday, Thursday was largely driven by updates that depositors were getting through Twitter and other social media about some of the bank's fundraising challenges. Is this social media effect the new normal?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say, right? I mean, if a bank with broadly diversified deposits, I would imagine the depositors would not be so intertwined and connected, and also wouldn't be following the lead and words of a very few powerful people who all said, you know, AKA the prisoner's dilemma, be the first to run, right? Unfortunate.
Right.
But the hysteria I'm more referring to is what's going on now, the politics, right? The political rhetoric around the situation. And just, it's disturbing, you know, it really bothers me just how everybody is just sort of picking up the drama and trying to turn it into just broad-based global hysteria. It's just overkill. So I don't know if I would blame social media, frankly. I think that's not right. I think the Silicon Valley Bank situation was just when the case study is written, it's a confluence of extraordinary things that all intersected at the same time, and that was just one of the pipes at play.
I think one thing, and it's funny, I actually talked yesterday with their new CEO with the team, and kind of talking about the going forward, and I actually found their going forward plan valid for us to continue to do business with them. And I'm actually, what my recommendations to other startups is to continue to do business with now it's called Silicon Valley Bridge Fund, but obviously they're working on a longer term plan. But I think, and this is what I shared with him, although he was not there last week, I think that their communications was really bad. And when you're not communicating correctly, then you can have others writing your narrative. And that's really what happened over Twitter and other social networks, right? And I think, you know, they had an issue. They wanted to do a funding round. They kind of had a half-baked round. They announced it. I think that even startups will not announce, a half-baked round. And I think the communication from that point was so bad that it allowed others to write the narrative over social networks. So I think the biggest lesson here is to make sure that you have a good communication plan. I know that we at Navan, we've communicated with our employees. We've communicated with our investors. We've communicated with the community, with our customers, and even in social. So we made sure that nobody will write our narrative and that we are actually explaining to everybody what's going on from our perspective. And that's my biggest lesson from that.
Interesting. Good point.
Yeah. We're getting a little bit close to the end of our time here, so I want to acknowledge we do have someone that wants to ask a question. Danilo, let me allow you to speak. You may need to unmute on your end.
Hello, everyone. Can you
Hi.
Hear me?
Hi. Yes.
This is great. I'm so glad you're doing this. A question for the panel. What advice would you give to someone who is, let's say, focusing on GPT-4 and machine learning? And specifically, what advice would you give a startup, you know, given SVB's collapse, in terms of who they ought to meet to solve some of the problems which have to do around friction in the travel agents, travel business, such as cancellations? We've seen a lot of canceled flights. I'm interested to hear from the panel what their thoughts are for young startups. You know, where do you go if it's not SVB?
Well, I mean, look, SVB had competitors. There are a lot of people that want deposits and want business, and you know, and there are other venture debt providers. So I think that, you know, the ecosystem of banking services is still going to be very much available to funded startups. And those banks have, at least in my view, they have very little to do with the initial financing that gets done, right? I mean, every startup that I know starts with equity, whether bootstrapped or otherwise. You know, it's equity that goes onto the balance sheet and the company builds its business. So I'm not really too worried about SVB's failure affecting the opportunity for startups. I think as far as, you know, bringing up a technology that, you know, like ChatGPT-4, especially the at least from my view, and the others may differ in this case, when you're attempting to attack a specific industrial vertical, I think it's all a function of, you know, what pain point have you recognized? In this case, you've recognized cancellations and refunds and flights. Good one. Then the second thing would be, what is your novel idea for solving that problem? You know, is it defendable? And then the third sort of leg of the stool is, who's out there doing the same thing, if anybody, and how are you going to compete? And all of that sort of on top of a commercial model. So it's more just sort of fundamental basics. I don't think anybody in the travel space is going to be investing in technology for technology's sake. They're going to be investing in great solutions, thorny problems, right? So that's what I'd focus on.
I think putting your head down and building, and you know, really focusing on building out your product and your business near term is probably the most productive thing you can do, because that will get you traction sooner and put you in a stronger position to go after funding when, you know, I think the next few weeks are going to be a little wacky. You know, investors are kind of waiting to see what goes on with, you know, the banking sector and everything else, right? And so I think the folks that are best positioned to raise money are the ones that are going to have a really solid product, really solid business model, and to the extent you can really focus on doing that near term, that will put you in a better position with respect to what else is in the market competing for fundraising at the same time.
I think in these kind of times of uncertainty, the best thing to do is to get back to the basics and ask what your customers need in this time. And I think right now what the customer needs is a lot of financial controls, visibility. And obviously this industry is really relevant from that perspective. And, you know, bring it back to ChatGPT, something that we are about to release is basically this ability to ask questions. Like if I'm a customer of Navan, I can ask, what was my spend last year on something, and how can I optimize it better? And I'm doing it really with GPT-4. And I think it's critical to provide your customers this kind of visibility. If you do that, they can actually make sure that they're using their money correctly. And I think that customers, specifically in this environment, will appreciate it.
Okay. And as we're wrapping up, those are kind of great closing comments from the three of you. Jack, any final comments from you about how your strategies may be changing, or maybe advice for fellow founders?
I think it's been set up pretty well. Just keep on getting the basics right. I think, you know, I'd encourage, no one in the industry to stop and wait to see what happens. I think you've got to plow on, and if bigger shock sort of develops, then deal with that when it comes to it. But getting the fundamentals right, working to your business plan, keeping efficient, delivering value to your customers is key.
Okay. Well, thank you so much to Jack, Chris, Kara, and Ariel. We really appreciate your insights on this very complex topic. And certainly thanks to everyone that has listened, and to my colleagues, Gene Coe and Alexis Capiatis, for their help in producing this event. I hope to see many of you at the Focusrite Europe event in June in our new city of Barcelona, where we are going to have an extensive program for startups and a center stage session on the latest related to the investment landscape. That's all for us today. Until next time, I'm Mitra Sorrells. Thanks so much for joining us. Bye-bye.